Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, it's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning, ain't it? Hope you're going to be with us this morning. Hope you've got some good questions because we're here to answer them. Just give us a call, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. And, you know, you get to send pictures as well. You can just text me pictures. We're going to talk a little bit more about how to celebrate your pictures this year once we get all that straightened out. But you can just text them to me, and we can help say, boy, you know, I may be able to identify that disease. I may be able to identify that problem. I may be able to identify that plant. Maybe it's a bug. Maybe it's something bigger. But we're happy to see those pictures. Just send them to us. We enjoy seeing them. Just text them, 251-343-0106. Listen, I have to think about how I am useful a lot, because I spend a bit of your time, and you have to listen to me, and I dang sure don't want to have you listen to me if I ain't being useful. So I think a lot about how am I being useful today? How can I be more useful? When am I most useful? And I'm most useful when I put you on Alabama time. When I get you to thinking about, this is not Michigan time. This is not California time. It's Alabama time. And I'm maybe most useful in helping you sort out, ooh, I'm going to say this out loud, some of Alabama's strange religions. And we have odd religions in Alabama sometimes. Now, I need to be careful saying that, but we have this religion. Let me tell you about this one. This is not your Sunday morning religion. This is your everyday religion. And it's particularly obvious this time of year. It is this religious belief that somehow you can't grow stuff during winter. I don't know where that came from. I don't know whose Bible you read that in. I don't understand it at all. But it's wrong. It's wrong. And I want to talk about that this morning, because we have this amazing ability in Alabama to grow stuff all winter long. And this is the time to talk about it. January is not the hard time. It's the easy time. It's the easy time. Now, I'll tell you something. Let me just give you some examples. Let's try to get over this idea that growing things in January is hard. I've been looking at these gardens all over Alabama, and I work all over Alabama now, and I see gardens everywhere. I have gardens in multiple places as usual, but let me tell you, I everywhere I drive, I see nothing but nothing. It's just nothing. There's no gardens. The turnips are all blasted. And, you know, a guy came up to me the other day and offered me some turnips, and I thought, that's a nice thing. I got lots of turnips myself. And he said, well, you know, I said, how do they look? He said, oh, they look pretty bad. I don't have any greens left. I said, I just got the roots in the ground, and I thought, wow, what happened? What went wrong? Because, and he's gardening longer than most folks around here. What is it that we don't garden in winter? Because there's so much that can be coming out of our garden. Right now, I got my broccoli is coming. I got another set of broccoli coming on. It's coming on really strong. My cabbages are coming on. I've got so many different varieties of kale. My parsley. We're gonna eat parsley tonight. I got so much parsley. Let me talk to you about how to make parsley. It's incredible. We can do incredible things. My carrots are doing just fine. My radishes are fine. I got collards. I had collards. They're unbelievably good. I mean, we're using them like lettuce right now because they're so tender. I've got Asperbrock. I've got, which is a weird kind of cross between, I don't know, broccoli and another two kinds of broccoli from China and the U.S. They're all doing fine. The carrots, they're doing fine. Everything is, it's all fine. What am I missing? Oh, the arugula. The arugula just laughs. Every time it gets cold, it just laughs. The garlic is up and it's green and it's lush. It looks beautiful in the garden right now. What am I, I don't get it. The garden looks better now than at any other time of year. You know, I've got, here's the other thing. It's crazy. I've got my sugar snaps. You know, they're going to be coming up. They can take cold, much colder than any cold we've ever had along the Gulf Coast. What do you call the things? Petunias. Petunias are reseeding everywhere in my garden. I'm starting my nasturtiums. It's a huge time of year for growing things. It's a great time of year for growing things. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how to do it if you're not doing it. There is, and let me tell you, I have a garden in North Alabama. It got to be 17 degrees. It was colder than, I know that some folks, Jim in Georgetown was telling me, Jim, what'd it get to be 24 degrees, 23, 24 degrees where you are? So we get these colder temperatures all over the state. But you know what? Things rebound really quickly. At 17 degrees, let me tell you what happened. Nothing. Nothing. It's absolutely amazing. Everything looks great. Everything is doing wonderful. I covered a few things. I covered my broccoli at 17 degrees because I don't think broccoli is going to do that well at 17 degrees. But you know what covering means? It means taking a blanket and pulling over it. You can just put some sticks on the ground, just some fluffy branches on the ground so that it holds the cover off the plants. That's all you need. You don't need to have clear plastic. You don't need to have some kind of weird device. You could just pull a tarp over it. You can just pull an old blanket over it. You could find a beach towel and pull over it. That's all it needs. That's all it takes because our cold temperatures are so brief. And you know what? You could be enjoying broccoli right now. It makes it really easier. It's easier to grow this time of year than it is to grow in summer. And that's the absolute truth. I love growing things in summer. I miss some of the summer crops, but I'll have to tell you, it's easy. I don't have to think about watering. I don't have to think about bugs. I just go pick. Getting on Alabama time. That's what this is about. Getting to think about how do we grow things in Alabama? We get our religion in Michigan. We shouldn't. We should be paying attention to what the land here in Alabama tells us, to what the climate here in Alabama tells us about how to grow things. That's what we want to do on this show. I've got a huge list of things that you could be planting right now. And if any of you are out there interested, you just ask me. You just call me and ask me, because this is the great time of year for planting. I hate to go on about it, but if you miss this time, you've missed so much of your opportunity for planting here along the Gulf Coast. Give us a call today. We're going to talk about all that. We're going to talk about what you can plant and how to plant it, precisely where to plant it. We'll talk about how to plant things in containers. We'll talk about how to plant things right slap dab in the soil. You can certainly do that. There's a list of plants a mile long. So let's talk about this morning. If you will give us a call, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. And me, I'm actually going through now and looking at what seeds I got left and figuring out how to grow them. It's harder to find seeds this year than it is usually. We can talk a little bit about that and how to find some of the things you might want to grow. But just give us a call, give us a text, 251-343-0106. Ooh, I'm going through. Gosh, I've got some great peas this year that I'm going to be planting. I'm really excited about them. There's a big pack of tall sugar snaps. There's the Aldermans. Ooh, boy, it's going to be fun. Let's get this going in your garden. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. It's fun to be here on the Gulf Coast.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and we wango.
Live
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch. Daylight come and we wango. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Rusty has sent me a great picture. I enjoy looking at these pictures, and it's really nice to see. Rusty, that is a great grass. He's asking me, is this a natural marsh grass? I can tell you right off, it is a natural marsh grass. It's a grass that grows in our marshes along the Gulf Coast, and that's been growing here for maybe millions of years. It's Cladium. It's sawgrass. And if you've ever heard of the sawgrass of the Everglades, this is probably the same sawgrass. You can feel the edges. Be very careful. Be very careful, because the edges will split your finger if you're not careful when you run it across it. But you can feel the edges just gently. And if it's got a little bit of a sawtooth, it's probably the classic sawgrass of the Everglades. It could be one of the smooth sawgrasses. I can't tell you which one, but it's sawgrass. It's a great grass. It's a cool grass. It's got, it's great for wildlife. It's just one of the really neat things that we have here. That one may be smooth sawgrass, or it may be the sawtooth sawgrass. So it's good to see that. Good to see that neat plant. It's really abundant in a lot of places. We think of it as a plant for the Everglades, but in actuality, it's just as at home here in Mobile. Around Mobile, you'll see it. That's down on Rusty's riding from the area on the border between Mississippi and Alabama, in those great salt marshes there. Beautiful plant there, but you'll also see it in the Delta. And you'll see maybe a couple of different species. So there it is. Kohlrabi. Josh, it's true. I have a hard time figuring out why kohlrabi does really well some years and doesn't do so well other years. I'm not sure what the problem is, but we'll see. We'll figure that one out. A few of the winter vegetables are also coming in good. The cauliflower, Josh, your cauliflower looks great. You'll have to tell me how you grew it. It just looks really good. And, you know, I think we had the right tip. Did you cover it, Josh? Did you cover that during the cold weather? I'm curious as to how that did. And the broccoli looks beautiful. Boy, is that the nicest head of cabbage I think I've ever seen. I don't think there are people who grow cabbage really, really well. I am not maybe the best cabbage grower in the whole world. I don't know what I do wrong, but boy, that is a beautiful cabbage. My cabbage's doing fine. It's just not heading up as pretty as that. Garlic is just as happy. Any rate, I don't know. We'll see what's going on with the kohlrabi. I do think the kohlrabi, Josh, needs a little bit of spacing, to do well. Hey, let's talk about what's going on here with what you should be planning. We did this list, and I'm going to repeat it for you this week. There are two ways that you could be planting this time of year. And three different groups of plants. The first off are the plants that you can just sow right in the ground. You don't have to put them in a pot. You don't want to put them in a pot. In fact, it's better just to go ahead and put these things right in the ground. And let me talk about them, because this is our last chance. This is our last chance. You know, I like to talk about the 12 days of Christmas. That last day is January 6th of the 12 days of Christmas. I suppose other things are happening on that date, too, that you'll need to be aware of. But this is, let's keep you focused on the garden for the time being. That's something you can make a real difference on. And what's going to happen in these next 3 days is it's a great time to put things in the ground. I know you're a little delayed, so I'm going to give you another week or two after that. But really, the first, before January 6th, between December 25th and January 6th, is an ideal time for planting lots of things. And you've got another week or two to worry with it. But listen, put your peas in the ground. Let me tell you what I got for peas. I've got Alderman peas. This is the classic pea. This is what, you can hear it shaking. Hear that? This is the pea that Grandma and Granddaddy grew, I'm pretty sure. And they always had it in their yard out on Schillinger's Road. They always planted it in February, which is fine, 1st of February. But actually, they could have planted it a little bit earlier. They were doing this a lot during the 80s. There were some tough times during the 80s. For a lot of gardeners, but I think they got in the habit of planting it a little late. But you know, it's a great time to plant right now. It's the best time. Alderman, they're beautiful. You shell these peas. You don't eat them in the pod, and that's the way they did it. And I remember Grandma cooking those up. Wonderful thing right out of the garden. I have some tall sugar snap peas too. Do they sound different? Sound about the same. They're sugar snap peas. You don't shell them. With the tall sugar snaps, you just eat them pod and all. They're really great, and they're really productive. And you plant them at the same time, which is this week if you possibly can. You just put them in the garden. Just put them in the garden. Now, what do you need to do anything special? Well, if you had some ashes... Once you plant them, if you just sprinkle some ashes on top of the ground, it's a great thing to do. If you want to make those, the ground is plenty warm right now. Those peas are going to jump up like crazy. They'll jump up. They'll be up in no time. They're great. Both of these peas, the Aldermans and the sugar snaps, are going to need something to climb on. Something tall, because they get about 6 feet tall. 6 or 7, maybe 8 feet tall. But you don't need 8 feet because you won't be able to pick them. You want just something that stands 6 feet tall. They'll flop over at the top, and that's fine. Give them something to climb on. We can talk about how to do that. I got all kind of ideas for how you can develop a trellis. But listen, if you want to do sugar snaps, and you don't want to have to come up with some trellis, just do something like Sugar Ann. It's a great pea, Sugar Ann. If I got some Sugar Anns I can shake at you, I do. But they're a little bit out of reach. But they sound like that. And Sugar Anns are great this time of year. You don't even need a trellis. You just sow them out. And you know, we sometimes grow them on pea brush. Pea brush is a nice idea. You just take sticks that you find, the wind blows down, kind of crooked-looking sticks that stand about, when you poke them in the ground and they'll stand about knee-high. That's pea brush. And they'll climb on that, and that's really all they need. Keeps the peas off the ground a little bit. Really easy to do, really fun to do, setting up your pea brush once you've planted your peas. But just put them in the ground. You don't even have to worry about any of that right now. You just put them in the ground. They're going to come up. You're going to be so excited when you see them come up. What do they need to grow? They don't need nitrogen. They don't need a lot of fertilizer. Again, if you can find some ashes, just sprinkle them on the ground. That's just fine. If you want to use a little bit of fertilizer, you can. But it needs to be a fertilizer that's very low in nitrogen, doesn't need a lot of nitrogen at all, and high in phosphorus and potassium. That's kind of the way to do it. Some peas, you know, peas may be doing just fine with just a little bit of compost. They actually don't need a lot of nitrogen. A little bit of lime can help too. A little bit of lime can help, but peas actually grow their own nitrogen. It's putting peas in the ground. That's the thing to do right now. Let me tell you the other things to put in the ground. carrots. And I'm just going to tell you, carrots, beets, man, what a great time to just sow them right in the ground. And here's what I would do for those guys, because it'll be just a little bit cooler. This will be a little cool, but get them, put them in, sow them in the ground. The thing is, sow them, you don't have to sow them in long rows. You can sow several rows together. Sow about four or five rows, you see what I'm saying, right next to each other, about 12 inches apart. Not even 12 inches, 10 inches apart, okay? And just sow them in rows about 10 inches apart. And you got a bunch of carrots and a bunch of beets in the same place. They'll both want some lime. They don't need a lot of nitrogen. They would prefer soil that's been taken care of, that's got a lot of organic matter, and it's got good drainage, but they do really well. It's really easy right now, and all you have to do is put a little plastic over. Once you sow them, don't sow them deep. Do not sow them deep. The beets can go a little bit deeper. The carrots have got to sit almost right on the surface. But once you do that, put a little bit of clear plastic on the surface just to warm things up and to keep that moisture going. Hey, we're going to be back and talk a little bit more about that.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. We got lots to talk about, don't we? Josh is telling me he didn't even cover any of his vegetables. This is the amazing thing. He didn't even cover anything. And he's got these beautiful cauliflower. I would have told him to cover the broccoli and cauliflower. I would have just said, Josh, I know. And he's down there he's down to the bayou. But there's some cold pockets down there, and it could be warm, but it can also, there could be some cold pockets. And I'd have said, Josh, better cover your broccoli and cauliflower just to be safe. But he didn't do it, and he did fine. And that's the way it works most of the time. It's just an amazing thing how easy it is. Billy on Fowl River is asking me, is this the right time for planting fruit trees? And yes, it is. Let's be clear. There's lots of kinds of fruit trees out there. If you're planting citrus, it's the only fruit tree, if you're planting citrus, let's get this out of the way, plant that in March and April. Don't plant it now. And we can come back and talk about why, but I want to quickly say everything else. Loquats, I don't know, what kind of fruit trees are you going to plant? Loquats, pears, both are really nice. We can talk about what kind of pears, loquats and pears and fig trees. What else you want to plant? Persimmons. Absolutely, this is the best time. Good, great time for planting persimmons. They're all great. Those are great. And go ahead and plant them right now. Right now. And they'll do just fine. They'll do just fine for you. So that's the thing. Call me, though, and let's talk about what kind of fruit trees are good to plant. And I've been thinking a lot about this. You know, a lot of people are going to think, oh, well, can I plant me an apple? And I've been reinvestigating apples. I give apples short shrift sometimes because it's really hard to find an apple that does well along the Gulf Coast that you'll really be happy with. But I'm rethinking them. I'm thinking carefully. And I've gotten a lot of research done, and I have come back to the realization that if you live on the Gulf Coast, if you live within, say, 25 or 30, 40 miles of the Gulf, you got better things to grow than apples. They don't do that well. But as you move farther north, you're going to do better. There are some varieties that will do better. North of Citronelle, yeah, there's some great varieties, but I wouldn't choose apples. Wouldn't choose apples, Billy. But there's some great pears. We can talk about the pears, some great pears to be growing. Listen, if there was one tree, one fruit tree that I would say, boy, you really need to be planting, it's persimmons. Boy, do I love persimmons. Boy, do I miss persimmons when I don't have them. They are one of the greatest fruits out there. They're beautiful. And the native persimmons are great. The Japanese persimmons are probably going to be more satisfactory to most people. The hybrids between the natives and the Japanese persimmons are very interesting. They have great flavor. They're really great. Let's talk about persimmons. But, yeah, this is a great time. Save your citrus for March and April. But go ahead. This is a great time to be planting. Great time to be planting other fruit trees right now. Barry is asking me, can you use fruit trees? Can you use tomato cages as trellises for sugar snaps? Sure, absolutely. It's a great way to do it. But just be thinking about it. You'll plant them in a little circle. I think that'll be just fine. Be sure to support it because they're going to really cover it. You know, here's what I think I would do if I were going to use tomato cages. I would have as wide a tomato cage as possible. I would sow them on the back half of that tomato cage and let them grow towards the front. I think that's how I would do it, rather than try to plant them in a complete circle around it. But, you know, there's another thing you can do is if you can unfold your tomato cages and just figure out a way to support them, it's a great way to do it. Yep, absolutely. Just grow them there on that hog wire tomato cage. Now, if by tomato cage you mean the little bitty things that you buy in Walmart, Home Depot, Lowe's, they're not good for much of anything. But if you've got a big 5 foot tall hog wire tomato cage, the classic round reinforcing wire tomato cage that we see a lot around the Gulf Coast. You can stick your hands through the wire. You need to be able to stick your hands through the wire to reach everything inside. They'll work great. If you're looking for other ways to do it, man, there's so many different ways of doing it. I just get a bunch of, you know, I get some poles and set them in the ground. You can make a teepee. That's great. The teepees work great. Just stick some poles in the ground. It works just fine. Bamboo works fine. There's so many ways to make a great trellis, and we can talk about that. Some people set two poles in the ground, run a wire between them, and then just lay poles on the wires. Very simple to do. Really easy to do. Anybody else got any great ideas about how to make a great trellis for your peas? Needs to be about 6 feet tall. It'd be nice if you could use it for something else a little later on, like maybe, beans later on in the year. That would be nice once your sugar snaps have done their thing. That's one way to think about it. Or, you know, use them for squash, climbing squash. Lots of other great things that climb. It's a great thing to do. If anybody's got any great ideas about how to do that, you call me. David, my good friend, says he's got his tomato seeds ready to go, and that's good. That's we're going to talk a little bit more about tomatoes in our next hour and why it's so important to get them planted now. But he's got his greenhouse up for his tomatoes. That's interesting. I want to hear about have you got heat in that greenhouse there? David, I'm interested. I know he's got the temporary greenhouse. Is that for your tomatoes, David, or is that just for? It's a beautiful looking thing. I guess that's for your tropical plants. I'm interested to hear how you're using your greenhouse. Interesting thing. My wife sometimes likes the idea of me getting the plants out of the house. And I recognize why that is, I guess. But, you know, for starting seeds, one of the best places to start them is inside the house. No, you don't need a greenhouse. And the reason it's so good is because your house is warm. It's already warm. You don't have to worry about warming it up. And just a simple heating pad can really make things work. So don't forget, your house may be your best greenhouse bet this time of year if you're starting seeds inside, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. David is also asking me if the County Extension Service would have an arborist that can come out to look at pecan trees. No, I don't think so, David. I'm pretty sure that they don't have... If you're going to prune them... And David's not sure either what you wanted. If you're going to make them more productive as pecan trees, I think an arborist is going to help. Would certainly help. The county extension agent probably isn't going to come out for a few trees. I don't want to speak for them, but I don't think that's kind of not what they do. But you might be able to get a little bit of advice over the phone. And I can certainly help you with some of the basics on pecan trees, though pecan trees, they're kind of a booger bear to spray and keep them perfect. They can probably use some lime. That probably needs some lime right now if production's the issue. If pruning them to keep them from falling apart is an issue, you really need an arborist, because it's a tough thing. With pecans, you need them to be open. You need them to have an open center. You need those branches. You need it to be pretty branchy. And in many ways, a pecan for fruiting is exactly the opposite of the kind of pecan you want if you want it to be resistant to wind damage. So you have to kind of compromise a little bit. Ooh, that's a tough one. So I really would want a professional arborist. If I were going to do that, I think I would go ahead and hire a professional arborist. I mean, I don't think I could figure it out. And besides, I'd want somebody else to blame it on if it didn't work. That's a terrible thing to say. But pruning pecan trees is hard. You'll probably need an arborist, and you'll probably need more than your cooperative county extension agent. Who probably won't be able to make time to do that. So just that thought. But David, try to figure out what she needs. Maybe we can help her a little bit, just on the show, with some questions about what those pecans need. What have we missed in terms of what we need to be planting? We got to the carrots. Did we get the carrots? Did you get that? I highly recommend it. Good soil for carrots, there's no question. And good soil means that the soil drains well. It doesn't mean that it's got a lot of nitrogen in it. It just means that it's got a lot of organic matter. That's practically how to do it, so that those carrots can develop deep roots. Same for beets. Beets will do really well. They need a little more lime than other crops. You can help overcome that by just adding some lime now and by adding fireplace ashes. If anybody's got any fireplace ashes, be sure to get it from them. If anybody's burning just straight old briquettes, not the compressed stuff, but just true wooden pieces in their when they're cooking their grilling outside, you can use those ashes as long as it doesn't have any binder in it. If it's long, not a, I shouldn't say, it's not one of those compressed briquettes, but more like a, what do you call them? The wooden pieces that they use for grilling now. Those are, the ashes from those are great. You can use that. That can really help. So great for your carrots. It doesn't hurt at this time of year to think about a lot of other kinds of things that can be ready for spring. If you're going to have, if you want to have collards for spring, if you want to have parsley or bok choy or mustard or more broccoli, one of the things, I'm going to talk about broccoli just a minute, and I'm going to run out of time, but there's a type of broccoli called rapini, which is actually, we'll talk about it when we come back. It's a great thing to plant this time of year.
Walk along the river. Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, I'm taking my lumps. Thanks, Rusty. Thanks, Josh, for reminding me that I knew something was wrong. For reminding me that the word is lump charcoal. There's a kind of a specialty language for all these things, and you got to be in the right file drawer or you forget it. Lump charcoal is the word we're looking for. If you want to use ashes from lump charcoal when you're grilling, that's fine. Now, your dog might lick the ashes if there's a lot of grease in them, but it's lump charcoal, not briquettes, that we can use for ashes in the garden. But fireplace ashes are really good. If you know somebody with a fireplace, say, gosh, golly, can I have some of your ashes? Because they are really useful. One way to think about it, and I've done this before, if some of you who live out in the country and burn limbs, those ashes can be pretty valuable. And one way you can get that in your garden and also eliminate some weeds, and I do this on occasion. Let's be careful. This is something for people in the country, if they're burning their stuff anyway. If you've just got limbs, don't mix in a bunch of trash and other stuff. Don't mix in plastics or metal, and don't certainly mix in treated wood or anything like that. But if you just got some limbs and you want to, and you're going to burn them, don't waste the good limbs by burning them in a separate pile. Take them to a place in your garden where you're going to grow things and you need the ashes and you need the potassium that's going to result from that fire, and build your little fire right there. Burn them up right there in the garden. And what you're going to get is you're going to get great nutrients out of that. You're going to increase the pH of your soil just a little bit, and you're going to kill a lot of weed seeds. Really a valuable thing to do because of the heat of the fire. Really kind of nice. And it probably also, you may even reduce the nematodes. This is something back, I remember many years ago when I was, when I had the privilege of seeing some of the first gardeners who were coming in from Cambodia and from Vietnam and from Laos, and were establishing gardens in South Mobile County around the bayou. It was great fun to go see how they were and learn from those gardeners and the things that they, the knowledge that they brought in about gardening in Southeast Asia to a similar climate in Mobile. And to see how they did their gardens. And they used fire very, very efficiently and very well. There are a lot of interesting things about those gardens. I wish I had more time to study them. But they would burn limbs and other debris in place where they were going to establish their gardens. And I think it had a lot of benefits. An interesting way to do it. This is not for those of you who live in the city. Not a great way to do it, but for those of you in the country, really a good thing. David says that a friend of his just dropped two loquat trees off, and he wants to plant them in Codin, about 75 yards away from the water, from the river. Do you have any advice? You know, I think they're going to do just fine as long as it's reasonably well drained. They are not the most sensitive trees to excess moisture. If they were, we wouldn't be growing them in Mobile. But you want them to be, you know, you want it to be a little bit well drained. 75 yards sounds like it's probably going to be reasonably well drained. If it stays wet, if the soil stays wet all the time, it's going to be bad no matter how far away from the water it is. Salt can be a problem, but they're not particularly salt sensitive. And I think you're probably far enough away that I think you'll be just fine. Make sure you've got plenty of space because they actually get pretty big. The other thing I would say about loquat trees is don't put them in a place where you need to prune them. That's all I can say. If you have to prune a loquat tree a lot, you're going to get fire blight. You're going to get fire blight issues, and it will be a big issue. Just mulch them. That's all you need to do with a loquat. You really don't even need to fertilize them. In fact, I can say certainly with certitude, you don't need to fertilize them. I've seen loquat trees produce like crazy with never any fertilization. Fertilization is going to cause big problems on your loquat. But it is good to mulch and keep that grass away from them. That will keep them productive. That will provide just the right amount of nutrients over a long haul. It's a great way to do it. But give them enough space. How much space? Well, you know, they're going to get 25 feet tall pretty easily. And that means they're going to be, you probably want at least 15 feet between the trees. Full sun, absolutely. Full sun for loquats. No need to have anything else. Anything less, and you've begun to reduce your crop. And down at Codian, there's really no need... no need to even offer that much winter protection. They're going to be pretty fine any way you do it. I think they'll be just fine. Yeah. So Josh is saying, so he raises an interesting question, that he's going to establish a new garden by burning limbs and brush at the new garden site. I've worried that it would kill too many of the beneficial bacteria and fungi in the area. Well, let's talk about it, because many of the beneficial bacteria and fungi are actually used to fire in our part of the world. They grew up with fire, and it's and they actually live on the carbon remnants of fire. And so, in one sense, you'll be establishing a lot of the normal, natural, beneficial bacteria and fungi that depend on the hard black carbon that results in the soil from burning. So they're going to be perfectly happy, and they're going to reinvade that area pretty quickly. What is interesting is that you will lose things that move a little more slowly through the soil, like nematodes. They won't appear in the soil so quickly. The effect is like this. Now, let me give you another example. A lot of people have experimented with heating up the soil to really high temperatures with clear plastic. It's called solarizing. And it's very effective, because what it does is it tends to disproportionately affect the bad actors in the soil. So the nematodes that are plant parasitic, they disappear and don't reinvade that soil very quickly. But the other bacteria and fungi that plants need and can be beneficial do reinvade very quickly. And there's probably a lot of reasons for all of that. But that's similar to what happens with a fire. You actually do lose a lot of the, I suspect, that the temperatures get high enough that you lose, in many cases, a lot of the bad actors, like plant parasitic nematodes, but the area is quickly reinvaded by the good actors, the fungi and bacteria that are going to be beneficial to your plants. Now, there's a lot of different creatures under there, tens of thousands of them. But all in all, you're going to see a beneficial effect. I wouldn't worry about that. Certainly adding that proper compost, that's ringing the dinner bell. So you can add the compost as soon as you burn, and you'll be fine. Organic matter is even better. Hey, we're going to take a break, and we're going to be back for another hour. So give us your questions. We'll got some pictures. We'll be talking about it. Mountain knows, isn't that-